How long have we been imagining? Generations, I think. And every generation has had a slightly different prescription. How do we get there? How do we ever create that world? Bringing all the differences of the world, cultural, economic, religious, together into some appreciative harmony. I was told once that all human beings develop this hard, rigid protection because we aren't there yet. We don't have the kind of world where it is safe to be just who you are, to be appreciated, to be loved. So we all grow these protections. Like the husks of a seed, they keep us safe inside. What is it that cracks open that husk? That can allow us to be little sprouts growing from that seed, free, beautiful. How many of you have tried the avocado pit on the windowsill? Yeah. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it takes this intention, you know, you put the little toothpicks in it, you set it in the water, you hope that that little inside seed will have the capacity to push through that hard avocado pit and become a tree. Sometimes it works, sometimes not so much. I remember for years, I had the sense, and I think this was the beginning of my ministry, I had Mary Oliver's poem, Wild Geese, hung on my wall, and it's that poem that we have said in Unitarian Universalist churches probably 20 years now. It says, "You do not have to be good. You do not have to crawl through the desert on your knees for 100 miles. You just have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves." There is that beginning place for all of us on our spiritual journey. We come to churches because we want to belong. We want to have a sense that we're okay just the way we are. And we want someone to love and appreciate us and wrap their care around us so that we can feel whole. That, to me, is a very important beginning place that we provide in a church. To welcome in the stranger, to give them that place of belonging, to give them that safety, to maybe break through that hard, crusty defense that they've been growing for years. There's a second stage, I think, to growing and developing as a human being, and I call it the Bill phase, because I met Bill through my mother. At the age of 86, my mother and Bill started dating. Bill was 87, and they spent, it was almost 10 years being friends. Now, my mother always drew the line, and Millie will appreciate, she says, "We never did any of that rolling around stuff." But they were truly wonderful companions. And when Bill died at the age of 98, my mother would reminisce about their years together, and she would get this soft, whimsical look in her eyes, and she'd say, "Bill was such a good person. He always remembered to bring back the grocery cart." I would say, myself, pretty low bar there. But, you know, that was how my mother defined good. So you take Mary Oliver, where you don't have to be good, right? And so then you learn to be good. You learn to bring the grocery cart back. You learn to do all those things that Robert Fulghum learned in kindergarten that he shares. You learn to say please. You learn to say thank you. You You play nice in the sandbox. So all those things I think of as the next stage. And it's what we try to teach our young people in RE. It's what we start to hold one another accountable for. But what I really want us to learn in this congregation is what I think of as the final stage of kindness, of spiritual maturation. And it's what I think of as radical hospitality. And I was introduced to that term years ago by another UU minister, and he had written, Jim Cunningham. And he wrote about radical hospitality is that deep place. Comes from the Latin root radix, which means rooted. And so he liked to think of that radical hospitality as being deeply rooted, not just in that superficial understanding of being a good person, but in a deep place that Naomi Nye talked about in terms of kindness, that place that knows sorrow and loss, and that place that inspires in us something greater than we could imagine doing by ourselves. And for me, that radical place of hospitality, I like to call my Peter and Ruth place. And some of you might remember, I've mentioned Peter Fleck before. He was my mentor and supervisor when I was doing my student ministry. And he and Ruth had this capacity that whenever you met them, whoever met them, you in their presence felt like the only person in the room. You felt like you were the most special, the most important person to them in their life. And everybody that met them had this experience of Peter and Ruth. And when I met them, I was a single mom, and I was struggling through seminary, and I had these two little kids. They would invite me to dinner. Peter would take me sailing on his boat. I didn't think they had anybody else in their lives because they always had time for me that felt endless. Well, little did I know, they were doing this with hundreds of people, with three churches. They served a church in Provincetown, in Chatham, Mass., and in Brewster. They had endless generosity and kindness. And it came to them because of loss. Peter and Ruth had met in Nazi Germany. They escaped the Nazis to go to Holland together. And he spent a long career being an international banker. They experienced the death of a child, the death of a grandchild. They knew deep sadness. They also knew that deep hatred that comes with something like anti-Semitism and a Holocaust. And it was from that place that they developed radical, radical hospitality. Now, this is something we're taught probably by all the world's religious traditions. Every scripture, every tradition has some semblance of the golden rule. How we're expected to treat one another, how it is we are to welcome the stranger, be a good Samaritan. And I think, I was reminded last night, I went to see Jim Wallace. How many others here? I see Millie here. How many went to hear him last night? He spoke about religious communities, and there was a multitude represented in that gathering, that it's in religious communities that we are called to be our best selves, where we're given the wisdom traditions to learn how to move from that place of you do not have to be good to the grocery carts to radical hospitality. And so I like to think of that continuum, and I like to think of Eshur from its beginnings having been on that continuum. And I think that Eshur is mature enough to start contemplating radical hospitality and what that would look like. We already have greeters and ushers. We know how to welcome people. We have that long list of accessibility things on our website. We have mobility freedom. We're making sure that our sanctuary and all our buildings are accessible to anyone with a walker or a wheelchair or with mobility challenges. We have hymnals for people who have difficulty seeing. We have hearing devices to help people who are hard of hearing. We have gender-neutral bathrooms. We take care of special needs children. We provide pastoral care for one another. So we're learning how to be caring and inclusive. We even have the kind of floor that will allow service animals to be here if we need them. There are things we don't yet have. We don't have a signer here that's signing the worship service. We don't provide our worship service bilingually for people who might speak Spanish as a first language. So there are things that we can still do. We plan to do training for our ushers and greeters to be more multiculturally aware of what it means to, what does it mean to a Hindu or a Sikh or a Muslim person, a person of color, to feel welcome. Do we behave differently so that they know that there's a place here for them? And as we prepare for our season of welcome, we want everyone to know that we are good. And we do know how to be polite and gracious. We are moving on that continuum, but there's always more that we can learn. Our whole reason for offering the Right Relationships Workshop October 14th is so that we learn how to be radically hospitable. We're going to be looking at things like, where did the announcement come in our order of service? So be prepared. We're going to start putting, during that month of season of invitation, we're going to experiment with where the offering goes, where the announcement goes, and we want you to feel some of the differences as we learn about being radically hospitable, what inclusion looks like, and what it means to be able to enfold people in that level of kindness that whoever comes through that door feels our welcome, that sees us making room for them, that sees that this chair is for you, whoever you are, whatever your needs, wherever you are on your journey, you are welcome here. I think it's important for us to do that here. I think it's important that our community learns what that looks like, and I think Bellevue is working very hard to be intentional about providing a radical hospitality for whoever comes to Bellevue. I look at Angela Merkel in Germany right now, the way they're opening their doors to immigrants. That is a nation who knows and has experienced what the ultimate in exclusion can produce, the kind of atrocity that hatred and racism and white supremacy can ultimately inspire. And Germany has not ignored their history. They have done in a way to take in what happened there during World War II, accepted that potential in themselves, and they don't walk around the streets feeling guilty or shamed. They are whole, but they recognize what hospitality looks like, and they will not repeat their errors. Jim Wallace inspired us last night to do the same thing in this nation, to look at what we have committed in our history against Native peoples in slavery, and to not feel bad about it, but to say, what do we do now? How do we change that? How do we make amends? How do we reconcile who we have been in our less than perfect stages so that we can grow into something better? That's the true meaning of spirituality. To look at who you have been in your life, to know what you'd like to do differently, to accept yourself just the way you are, and have a vision of who you want to be. I want Eshur to be the place where anyone can walk in and know that we are here in our perfections and imperfections to say, I see you. I see who you are, and you belong here. And we will walk this path of learning and growing together. One of my favorite songs is written by Susan Werner, and it's called May I Suggest. And this song talks about whatever place we are, may I suggest that is the best place of your life. So to me, that's spiritual maturity, that you're not looking for someplace else to be happy or someplace else to be good or someplace else where you have to get to, but you accept yourself right where you are and right here. That is the best place of your life. There's one particular verse where she says, there is a hope that's been expressed in you, the hope of 7 generations, maybe more. And this is the faith that they invest in you. It's that you will do one better than was done before. Inside you'll understand, inside you know what's yours to finally set right. And I suggest to you that is the best part of your life. Today, here, we remind each other that we are here to improve. We are here to learn. We are here to grow. And that we are each somewhere on this continuum of learning kindness, learning radical hospitality. And ultimately, we're here to keep imagining. Keep imagining. And perhaps we can finally live into a fulfillment of that dream. Imagine.